All right, welcome to A New Hole on Tour. We're looking at a fairly short par 3 with some grassy fairways, relatively tricky little shot. Options could be putter, flippy mid-range, or some people even would throw a forehand. One person that I've seen threw a line that I've seen no one else take on this hole. The trees on this hole are...
Hole 6 at Waco.
Yes, it is hole 6 at Waco.
Really?
Oh, how did
Kevin
you get
Jones.
It so quick?
Kevin Jones grenade.
I was thinking of hole 1 at Brewster, because it's like almost... It's very similar.
Oh, it's very similar.
Were you thinking of Kevin Jones grenade on that hole?
I thought Eagle also threw a grenade on that hole once.
I throw a grenade on that shot.
I forgot Kevin did it too. Yeah, so Eagle and Kevin threw the grenade. Yeah, that hole. I tried to get like a hole that is kind of random, which that little is. I can't believe Joey got that so quick. So
Joey just always has Waco on his mind.
Oh, I feel like so my description was so bad too. So thanks for relieving me there, Joey. Good job.
We all have a point.
Is that right?
We're all tied up.
I think we got to keep that segment going then. And welcome back to Crushed Pepper, episode 6.
Wow. Episode 6.
Super
you know
Bowl
what I
Sunday edition.
Oh my gosh, it is Super Bowl Sunday. Wow. Who do you got? Who do you
we
got?
We said this
who do you
last
want?
Week, but I've got and want the Eagles.
Wow. I actually want the Chiefs to win.
No
I
way.
I want to behold greatness, okay? Has anyone ever won four? How many Super Bowls in a row would this be?
Three.
It had never been done.
Like, even I know that.
See, I like seeing greatness. Even though the Chiefs are the Chiefs, my dad is a Cowboys fan, so I don't feel like I'm allowed to like the Eagles. So that's kind of the reason why. And I am from Colorado, so in theory, I should hate the Chiefs. But I don't know. Shout out Jerry Patterson, TD of the Kansas City Wide Open. I want him to be happy. And I also want Colton Montgomery to be happy. Colton probably looks so red and so orange right now. It's not even funny. Or it's probably pretty funny.
Here's Cold my take. Here's fan. My take on the epic showdown tonight. I couldn't care less who wins. I don't even know any players on any of those teams. I don't even know where those teams are from.
And you're not even probably going to be watching.
I won't be watching. But
I probably won't watch either.
From all the research I've done, which is about 10 minutes of my life, I think the Eagles are
going
to win.
That's a lot.
I think the Eagles are going to win. And if I was going to place a bet, which I am definitely not, I would bet on the Eagles. But that being said, I hope no one wins.
You hope
I
it's
hope
a
the
tie.
Halftime show wins.
Simon, you have to know who Travis Kelce is, right?
Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, he's Taylor Swift's
okay, so,
boyfriend.
Okay, so you know one guy playing in the game at least.
Well, Natalia told me today that there's a rumor that if the Chiefs win, then he might propose on field to Taylor Swift.
It's
and
how
that's
the script,
why Natalia wants to watch the game.
It's how the script writers of our countries. It's how the script writers of our country would want it done. But, you know, let's do our listeners a favor and continue on past America's greatest game into America's greatest game, disc golf.
The true greatest game.
World's
and,
greatest.
The greatest game no
I will,
one knows about.
I will start with a technical note that for the first time ever in my life, I was told by multiple people that last episode I sounded too quiet. I didn't think that was possible, but I have attempted to adjust my volume a bit whilst maintaining my physical distance away from the mic, so we'll see if that
we're still 950 rated podcasters.
I'm doing my
that's
best.
That's very true.
Our goal is to get to 1,000 by the end of the year.
So Eagle, you're kicking this off for us today.
I guess I'm kicking this off. This is going to spark some discussion. I guess it's a pseudo segment, or let's just say it's my segment. But I came up with some ideas, and of course, I gave them the ChatGPT to create a poem, because I can't create a poem by myself. But let's just jump into it. This is going to spark some controversy, maybe some hot takes, but all in good fun. Without further ado, let me tell you my poem called My Dream of Disc Golf. No par three, too long to fly, unless the hill lets discs soar high. Four full sends, no need for more. Precision keeps the game pure. Fairways wide, at least 15, a clear path carved through woods so green. Smaller baskets, sharper aim, skill, not luck, defines the game. 16 discs, pack light, play free, a perfect course designed for me. Thank you very much.
Did Simon write that?
Did ChatGPT write that?
ChatGPT wrote that, but I gave it, here are my prompts. My dream of disc golf, no par three is longer than 500 feet unless downhill. Never more than four max power throws per course. Fairways must always be at least 15 feet wide. Smaller baskets, and to top it off, a limit of 16 discs are allowed in your bag at a time.
All what right, if disc question golf one, was like one. That? Do you know a fairway on tour that is not at least 15 feet wide?
So what I mean by this, there's never like a ninja tree in the middle of the fairway. There's the skinniest part of the fairway is 15 feet.
Definitely open at Austin. There's a couple holes in the open at Austin layout that are not 15 feet wide. Those little par three, par fours in the woods there.
Hole five or no, hole six at Maple Hill. They're like that little bottleneck at if you take the right side by the wall, that's probably less than 15 feet.
As close, as close.
13 at Maple Hill, if you're going to make that argument then.
You could say hole four at Maple Hill.
I think hole four is 15 feet. No.
It's probably
15. It might be 12, 13.
But four, don't change hole four. Hole four is beautiful.
Hole four is short enough where it's almost okay.
My biggest thing is I just don't – I don't ever want to see a tree in the middle of a fairway. Yeah. I like tight fairways. Don't get me wrong. But at least 15 feet wide.
There are a couple.
You should be able to get a – you should be able to drive a car through it pretty comfortably.
That was my only gripe about the Monster last year at European Open was that I felt like there was a couple too many like random fairway trees that –
You know that big like arcing turnover shot?
Yes.
The hole after it. There's this little dinker hole that.
Yes.
There's like these just random trees.
Yep.
And of course, everybody but you on your card birdies it, and then you hit the one tree that you should miss.
Right.
Best feelings in disc golf.
Best feelings.
But
I
do you guys have any
poem?
Do you have any qualms with that? Like, what if that was the disc golf that everybody was playing? Do you think that would be a positive change for our sport? And it's our obligation now that we have a podcast to talk about stuff that probably won't happen and speculate.
Yeah. That's the world of disc golf I want to tour in.
I think disc golf just needs to embrace that it is easier than golf. And we need to embrace the low scores. I mean, some sports are just there to be perfected, and golf is clearly not one of them, but I think disc golf is one of them if you keep it fair and just use sense.
Just because they hit 9 darters all the time in darts, should they make the bullseye smaller just to prevent it now because they like now it's being hit more often?
Well,
you know, like
a 9 darter, like, let's say, is equivalent to 18 under in disc golf. 18 under has happened literally three times in the last decade.
Back at the darts podcast, guys.
So 18 under happens way less than a 9 darter. 9 darter is like maybe 10 to 15 times a year. So
I feel like a 9 darter is like a 10 down through 9 stretch.
Side tangent. Joey thinks that he's going to be beating Simon consistently in darts this year.
That is going to be content.
It's going to be content?
Well, at which point then I think I need to bring the nice dartboard on tour because I can't have any room for excuses.
Speaking of bringing on tour, sorry, Eagle, go ahead.
I just want to say sorry to my friend Chad, who's listening.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, Chad. Every time I hear the name Chad, I think of the movie Charlie's Angels.
Was Chad not a darts guy?
Chad is not a darts guy.
Well, there's more darts coming up in this episode. Sorry, Chad.
This is a darts podcast.
Oh, God.
Anyway, Eagle, your poem is beautiful, in my opinion. It's exactly what I want to see.
It's AI. The two points of my poem that I feel like is the most important, smaller baskets and a limit of 16 discs allowed in your bag. I think if you targeted those two aspects, it would make disc golf so interesting, in my opinion. Because imagine playing a course like Fountain Hills, but putting on small baskets. It would be like, it would truly incentivize accuracy, execution. And every course, throwback to 2016, I played a non-sanctioned event called Disc Dash for Cash up in Twin Falls, Idaho. And we actually played the entire tournament on marksman style baskets. And what I got out of it was it incentivized good approach shots and good tee shots so much more than what we're doing now. And it was a total joy to play on. But I remember talking to the counterpoint of what I'm making. Germ played a course, I think North Carolina. They did a similar thing where they did an unsanctioned event on smaller baskets, and he said he absolutely hated it. Everyone hated it. Everyone was crying. It was a complete disaster. But I don't know. I don't think it should necessarily be a marksman style basket per se, but probably shrink the basket by about 25 to 40% even.
Have you seen the basket UC has in his backyard?
That's like a marksman style, like bullseye.
No, it's like between that, normal and marksman.
It might be new then. I remember staying at his house back in like 2016, and he had a disc golf park marksman style basket, like custom made.
Yeah, but it was bigger than a marksman. We're talking about the same basket. I think we just remember it differently. It's not as skinny as a marksman.
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Okay, well, yeah, I think a hybrid between marksman and what we have right now would be ideal. The question is if it's acceptable that we put on different baskets on the pro tour than your average disc golf course will have in the ground, because I don't believe every disc golf course is going to change their baskets.
I thought this through, but I think that it's completely fine to have a pro level basket.
Absolutely,
small.
Especially
and
if
eventually,
it's not.
Eventually, there would be adoption of the pro level basket. So if a new course goes in, if you have the option, do we want to have pro baskets or standard disc golf baskets? A lot of the time, they're going to start picking the pro baskets. I don't think it's something you have to change. You don't have to change all the courses, by no means. I think having normal baskets for your C, B, and A tiers is completely fine. But if you're playing on the pro tour, you're putting on a smaller basket. That's my take.
Especially if it's not too stark of a difference. Like if it's a slight reduction in size and not like a half size smaller.
All right, I'm going to propose this right now. Us three start a company. We hire some kind of mechanic or designer. I'm not really sure what job description fits someone who can design a disc golf basket. And we'll make a prototype and we'll test it and we'll propose it to the Pro Tour as the new Pro Tour basket. We could do it. We could literally just do it.
We literally could do it. I have no money, but I'll put in my blood, sweat, and my energy into this company.
You know what's going to happen though if we start putting on smaller basket? You're going to notice a big decrease in inside circle percentage for the time being, but then it's going to catch right back up in about 2 or 3 years and it's going to be about the same.
But circle Perfect. 2 percentage is going to be a very interesting stat to watch. But I think the smaller basket, in my eyes, would eliminate the need to adjust any sort of circle 1, circle 2 issues right now. I don't know about the step mm-hmm. putt, I suppose. I think the step putt also is solved with the smaller basket because the fear of blasting past, like, eliminates the aggressive short circle two stab, I think.
So if we go back in time, a lot of the baskets were smaller. If you're putting on a Mach 1, Mach 2, or even Mach 3, the taper down near the cage is pretty skinny and obviously less chains. A lot of the people, a lot of the OGs putted more on like a push putt or like nose up spin putt so they wouldn't blow past the basket or eliminate any potential cut throughs. So they were a lot more cognizant of how they handled themselves around the green. And I'm not saying like, I want a smaller basket that's going to catch my putt almost every time. Like if I hit dead center, I don't want it spinning out. But as for like the Mach 1s, Mach 2s, they're cut through galore. But I'm not saying that I want less chains. I want more chains, but smaller target.
I think we can do it. All right, I'll start the business plan right now. Or maybe the business plan is Joey's job, and Eagle and I will do the funding when needed.
But I'll go to a trade school and take up welding, and I'll create the baskets.
Well, I don't well, wait actually, 2 years for my basket.
No. Hey, my dad is retiring on June 1st, and he already took 2 years of welding. So we'll just have him do it, make our prototype as a retirement project.
The hot tamale basket.
I bet there's someone listening right now who could do it for us.
Oh, for sure.
I mean,
if you're an industrial welder,
baskets.
We don't even need a welder. We need someone who can like 3D design on a computer and then just 3D print something small, and then we can go from there. That would be step one, I think.
Yeah. Chad Richardson has entered the chat.
Is this the same Chad?
This is the mastermind behind
That's MVP's
all
Chad.
Of MVP's disc design.
Oh.
He's the CAD master.
Topic switch. I played Team Challenge yesterday.
Oh.
Congratulations.
And it was crazy conditions. It was a nice day, but it was like 25 degrees and like icy snow. Like it was like a snow layer and then a tiny layer of ice over the snow. So it was pretty fun out there. We played Mile Marker 63. So, of course, I designed great battles. I had a dead center spit out for ace with a hex. That was awesome. I made two eagles on one hole. That one was like a 60-foot jump putt up the hill. And then in the second round, I eagled the same hole again from like 120-foot throw-in.
Jeez.
So that was cool. And I tested some new molds in my bag. One was the, what does MVP call their like metal flake proton plastic?
Particle glow?
Particle glow?
No glow. Just proton, but with like metal flakes inside.
Oh, prism proton?
They just call it proton. Yeah.
So it was a proton vault, but it had definitely these weird specks in it. It's probably a run from years ago. I don't even know what run it is. It was one of the discs I got initially sent by MVP when I signed. Holy cow, that disc is freaking good. I love it. Perfect stability. Exactly what I was looking for. I was so happy with it.
Proton Volt. Underrated.
Yeah, so that was really good. I did a lot more balance testing, so I was throwing that yesterday as well. I actually bought the whole box of balances, and I was doing in between rounds. I just threw balances back and forth trying to see which one was the one. And I gotta say, version 2 is leading the race right now. I'm just kind of trying to figure out which exact one or 3 or 4 of them I want to give note back to MVP that they should try to repeat what they did with those. So I definitely want something that is a bit more overstable than not out of the box, because then it'll beat up into something just perfect. But man, it was nice to play again yesterday. It was my first round. Like, I played 9 holes with Gannon, of course, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. But besides that, I have not played any disc golf. So that was really fun. My team won. In doubles, we actually shot 18 under, me and my partner. So that was pretty special. It was a good day on the course.
I'd say.
And I'm actually really excited to go to Florida in 2 weeks. It's only 2 weeks away now. Pretty cool.
It's coming up quick. Coming up quick.
How far along in the team challenge season are you guys? Are the playoffs nearing? Or I don't understand how the season ends in team challenge.
I think we have one more match in March and then finals in April. Wow. There's only one match per month. And yeah, I think we're guaranteed now that we will have obviously be in the finals. And it's all about getting buys now in the finals, because the finals can be 3 rounds in 1 day or 2 rounds in 1 day if you earn the buy. I'm not really 100% sure how the format works, but I think we're on good pace to get the buy. So if we make it to the finals, we most likely will only have to play 2 rounds that 1 day. And the finals are in an off week. It's actually the week after Nashville. I'll be back home playing the finals of Team Challenge. So that's going to be...
Where is it?
It's going to be at the New England Disc Golf Center in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's about an hour 20 maybe from my house. So not too bad. And I haven't played there in like 4 or 5 years. So I'm excited to go back. I think a lot has changed there. It's always really exciting for me to play a competitive round blind on a course I have never played before. That adds just like an extra challenge that I like to set for myself, because obviously I'm not playing against other professional players. I play against sometimes shockingly good amateurs. Like I had a really fun battle yesterday with a guy. He's been playing for a long time. He was throwing a bunch of old school plastic, and man, he was definitely throwing the disc better than me yesterday. He just missed a couple too many key putts where I ended up still snagging the win. But almost every single match I've played in Team Challenge, there was a realistic chance I was not going to win. But still, I'm undefeated.
You clutched up. You showed him that you were Simon Lazat.
I definitely have the advantage that people tend to overthink when I'm on the card. So I have at least that going for me.
And you guys are Team Buffumville Dam, and yep. I really think it would be genius if you guys had Team Buffs. Do you know what a buff is? Like a balaclava, like a little like a neck gaiter for some people. I think you should have a Team Buff because you're Buffumville.
Well, our team is called Team Buff.
Yeah, so you should have a buff. Like you guys should make a piece of apparel. Like that's what it's called. It's called a buff. And then it's like a...
You know what's also a buff?
What?
The Colorado Buffaloes. You could be a band of buffaloes. You could all dress up in buffalo costumes and play there. And you could be like the Buffalo Stampede. And the Buffumville Buffalo Stampede.
Jeez. At least in my upbringing in high school, in the cross-country skiing world, that's what we called those really thin neck pieces that weren't a hat and they weren't like a balaclava. They weren't Ricky at Waco that 1 year. It wasn't the full thing. So it was just this little neck piece, and that's called a buff.
And you know what? You guys could be the Buffumville Dam in the buff, and you could all go play naked.
I'll pitch that idea to the team next
that would
month.
Be intimidating to the rest of the teams. Just a band of naked guys showing up and kicking butt.
Well, don't they also have FPO?
Team Buff? Oh yeah.
So it's every not team has naked FPO. Guys. This is not just naked guys. It's a whole stampede of naked everyone.
Naked everyone. That's a good name for the podcast.
Naked everyone.
Oh, yes. We're back on the far out podcast names. I skipped a couple episodes with my ideas.
Yeah, we might. This might be the one.
I have a should new name to champion.
Should we talk about Ricky signing a bit before we get to the next topic?
Let's do that, but I'm going to quickly loop that into the rest of the news because it's pretty small. So we'll do two other quick ones before Ricky.
Spicy news alert.
Spicy news alert. Macy Vela-Diaz re-signs with Dynamic Discs. for a one-year deal.
So she was with DGA, and now she's on Dynamic again?
Yeah, so this is just, I know Macy and Jamie, and very well, pickleball friends, and just two of my favorite people on tour, just like some of the nicest people that you can meet, and they have a beautiful little baby, probably, I don't know the specifics, but I would say maybe just over a year old or almost a year old now. And yeah, so Macy competed last year for DGA while pregnant and then had the baby and took some time off from touring. And then I'm pretty sure came back and played a couple events as well. It was a really interesting circumstance in how she was let go from DD last offseason. I will say it just didn't feel like, especially at being my friend, didn't feel very...
It was controversial.
Oh, for sure. It did not feel very right to me. And I was honestly really glad that DGA stepped in and gave her something to allow her to compete. And Dynamic Discs has recommitted. So obviously they've rekindled that relationship. And Dynamic has done enough to show her that they are willing to support her again. And I just hope that that continues. The other news, Joel Freeman, sponsored by Infinite Discs, one of the best sponsorship announcement videos of the offseason. Probably the best one. I don't think you can top that. That was hilarious.
It was pretty funny. I saw it.
Did you see it, Simon?
I remember seeing something, and I watched it for a couple seconds, and then something happened where I lost focus. But I forget exactly what it was.
He had the hammer by his head. He was like reading the statement.
That's right. Yeah. I did see at least some of it.
But the biggest news, arguably of the entire offseason, besides for the fact that Drew Gibson kind of tipped us all off to it a couple months in advance, and then the whole internet started going wild. Ricky Wysocki leaves Dynamic Discs and signs a 3-year deal with Discraft.
Rickscraft.
Gigantic news. And yeah, honestly, you guys on Crush Pepper, the fans, you are lucky because I have spent the last 4 days in Ricky's house filming 6 YouTube videos for his channel and spending basically the entire week in his first week with Discraft. So,
are we going to get it inside the circle of Ricky's mind?
I think we can, but you guys have to pretend to be disc golf fans who want to know what's going on so I can answer some questions.
What kind of disc golf fan do you want to be?
No, you're the fan. I'm the...
I know, I'm asking Simon. I'm asking Simon.
Well, I am a disc golf fan. I'm probably one of the biggest disc golf fans in the world.
But you're not Simon Lizott in this hypothetical.
Well, he could be if he's curious. We gotta do some
role playing right now.
I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what you're asking.
Just hey, maybe Simon on his own is just curious.
Who do you want to be?
I'm Tim Smith. All right, I'm Tim. From Overland Park, Kansas, and my what favorite disc know? Is the MVP relay.
So why do you care about Ricky going to Discraft then?
You know, I think it's really cool seeing a company like Discraft pick up Ricky because they've literally just got everybody.
They're the Dodgers. As Ricky leaked it himself 2 days before, they are the Dodgers of disc golf. And yeah, it was a crazy 4 days down in Arizona. We filmed 6 separate videos. We had some kind of vlog style stuff, we had some course style stuff, and yeah, he's got boxes on boxes of discs and he's getting set for the season. And I mean, he does not kind of miss a beat, really. I think ever since the Lyme's disease and the nutritional recovery and physical kind of learning process that he gained from that, I think he is just sort of stuck in that gym, eat healthy, practice putting, he just goes. And it is very impressive. Very, very impressive.
Tim Smith is wondering if he's going to be playing the Shelly Sharp Memorial.
Yes. First all-disc craft tournament.
Tim's going to be watching live coverage or post-produced coverage if it's available, because he wants to see Ricky throw his Raptor and do Raptor legs.
Yeah, he's got the Raptor.
He's a fan.
He's going to be putting with the Focus at the moment, the AB Focus. He's got his own signature putter that they're designing, Dagger-esque Discraft version, but it's in its tweaks right now. I actually have seen some of the protos, so it's close. They're close, and it's got some cool stuff on it. And he's a big Venom guy. He is also throwing the Buzzsaw. He loves that. He is swearing that the Buzzsaw is doing to the Buzz what like the MVP rims are doing to MVP mid. So he is like, his hunch is that the Buzzsaw's weighted rim makes that disc, that Buzzsaw, fly further than the Z Buzz.
As a disc golf fan, with my name being Tim Smith, I consume the coverage of Ricky throwing at Vista del Camino, and he says he's testing out a new grip. He says he's throwing a power grip, and he's getting less distance but more accuracy, which puzzled Tim Smith's mind, because generally speaking, a power grip gives you more distance.
When did he say less distance?
He totally said less distance.
Well, he's...
What's...
Ricky says a lot of things when the mic is in his in his direction. Like, I love Ricky. I'm a huge Ricky fan, of course. He's an amazing disc golfer. He's a fun person. But oh boy, when he starts going on tangents when he's talking, damn, I get lost. I get completely lost in his brain, and I don't even know what the hell he's saying anymore. Okay. Like, we're all not professional speakers, of course, but... And Ricky's gotten way better than he used to be, but oh boy, sometimes I'm just like, what did you just say? Does he even know what he just said?
Tim Smith has gone back to Overland Park, Kansas. Eagles back. Ricky, I was talking to my dad about it the other day, and my goodness, Ricky obviously one of the biggest names in disc golf, but I don't think he gets the praise he deserves, honestly. He is unreal how good he is. Like,
oh,
consistently. Consistently. Like, look at his resume of tournaments. Oh my gosh. I'm going to do a hot take.
Since 2015, he's been the number one disc golfer on the planet, and there is no argument.
He's the third best disc golfer of all time. That's my hot take.
Well, if you're that good at putting, disc golf is easy. Like, he just makes it from everywhere,
obviously,
always.
But his control forehand when he was with DD, he was throwing the harp. And honestly, a narrative of Ricky that I always thought was untrue is that he's a sprinkler system. I don't see that at
backhand.
All. Backhand? No, not even a backhand. I think he has one of the best. I think his backhand is really good.
It
Dude,
is.
You guys know what
He fillets lines.
You guys know what I just remembered?
This has just become
Speaking
me praising
the...
Ricky. Like,
oh,
Ricky. Okay, let me just finish my Ricky praise session. I think Ricky puts in more work than almost any other disc golfer, and I give him so much credit for that. Ricky's probably the player I look up to the most being in the professional sphere, and he kind of sets the standard for me to strive for. Just because he's very disciplined, he's had a lot of adversity, whether it comes from Lyme disease and whatnot. And I have a ton of respect for Ricky's game, and I base a lot of my game off of Ricky, just because I'm 6'3", he's 6'3", and I feel like I can learn a lot from him. So seeing him at Discraft, I think it's going to be very, very cool to see how he grows and develops. And like, I think he's more open to being more of a team player now, because he's talking about throwing. I mean, he's throwing Paul Macbeth's discs.
He had no choice, because we were like, they're just so good. We were doing this field session where he was messing around with mid ranges and fairways, and every Paul disc that he threw, he turned around and he was like, Oh man, that one might have to go right in the bag.
Well, there's a few molds. Like I imagine he threw the onyx.
He was a big onyx and a big Malta and a big Luna guy. Those were his three big favorites. But he loved the Malta. He was like really stunned with how much he loved the Malta. I think that was his favorite, which is like in my eyes probably the least popular of the Macbeth molds.
Ezra Robinson's been digging the Malta, at least from the Go Throw coverage.
From the bag that he did with all Maltas.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's
wild. Did you see that? His in the bag? Watch that. It's a total, it's like the classic Robinson Brothers theme, like just total meme where he's just like, and here's my distance driver I use for long shots. It's a Malta. And he just does like 20 Maltas in a row.
Wow. Okay, that's funny. I'll check it out. But yeah, it's wild. And I mean, he's Ricky freaking Wysocki. He's one of the best to ever do it. And
I just want to say respect. One thing to counter what you said. Yes, obviously Ricky's very good at everything, but you don't become known for being like the best putter in the world from Circle Two if you're an overly amazing thrower of the disc. Like, he is known to be such an amazing putter because he constantly has to make long putts.
That's true.
So
I'm not gonna argue that too much.
I mean, we all land,
but
in
it's
circle
all scramble. It's a lot of scramble. He's making a lot of his putts on like par fours where it's like you're throwing a good drive, and I get what you're saying, but we all spray shots too. We
of
all
course.
Have to make long putts.
I would say Ricky is way better at accuracy than I am. I'm also a sprinkler.
My speculation, when I came onto the scene, it was 2016, 2017, and that's when Ricky just started taking. He was always a good putter, but there was this time frame where it was unbelievable. Whenever you think you were getting a stroke on Ricky, a putt would be flying from like 120 feet away, dead center chains. Like anytime he was struggling for par in the basket. And there was the consensus on the Disc Golf Pro Tour for a period of time was, this is not even real. This guy is, he literally didn't miss. It was a spectacle to watch. And now you have a lot of other players who make a ton of putts, like Gannon, Ezra, Isaac. There's a ton of good putters, but maybe it's nostalgia talking, but it was unbelievable. 2016, 2017, Ricky, my goodness. Go do your favor, go back, watch some coverage.
I would take Ricky's putt over anyone else's putt without even thinking about it. I think he has by far the most consistent, best-looking putt in the last 10 years. It's not
of the predominant push putters on tour, he has the best spin putt transition. Like, he is a good spin putter now.
Can we name this podcast We Love Ricky Wysocki?
Seriously. There's another thing I wanted to add about this trip is the last video that we filmed, which is coming out on Ezra's YouTube channel, was a putting challenge in Ricky's backyard, the Desert Oasis. And it was a beautiful, sunny afternoon, and I lost you guys.
Joy's internet, folks. Minnesota.
Hey, Ricky, you're so fine. You're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Ricky. Hey, Ricky.
We still see you, Joey.
Sweet. All right, I'll just start from the section that I was going to start and see if Will can splice this in, all right? So the most interesting part of the trip, in my opinion, I wanted to touch on because it relates back a little bit to the small basket talk, is it's coming out on Ezra's channel. It was the last video that we filmed, and it was a putting competition in Ricky's backyard at the Desert Oasis, and it was on a custom basket that Ezra had made. I think what he did was he took an MVP like macro basket and then essentially beefed up the inner chains. Like he took like chains as thick as the Gateway ones that we tested, Eagle, literally that thick.
Oh my gosh.
And put those in the middle, and then they did, and it was tiny. I mean, it was one disc wide by like, I don't know, one disc high if you turned it on its edge, and Rick destroyed them. They got absolutely murdered, and the whole time they were all talking about how all four of them, it was AB, Ezra, Adam, and Rick, all four of them said that there was some defects with the catch, but all of them said that if it caught well center, that they would putt on that and be cool with the tour moving towards something like that. So I thought that was just an interesting, like, side note on our small basket discussion, is like, even guys with really hard putting styles like Rick were very for like a smaller target, albeit if it catches consistently. So he's a absolute a demon of a disc golf player. And the way that, I mean, just people don't even forget, if you really want to go watch the beginning of Ricky Wysocki, go watch the 2015 Masters Cup or 2016.
2016.
The birth of Raptor Legs, which I don't know if this is quite historically accurate, but from what I understand, I don't know if it was the pre-tournament interviews or some interview earlier that season where essentially like a former traveling mate and teammate and friend, Paul McBeth, said that Ricky couldn't close tournaments. And I don't know if that's was it the pre-tournament, was it in like the pre-tournament press conference that he said that, or
from my understanding, this was a controversial time in disc golf. Paul McBeth was interviewed by the Los Angeles Times.
Oh. And
Paul McBeth essentially said that he is out on the disc golf course to win tournaments and not make friends.
Yeah.
Had a little commentary about Will Schustrick and Ricky, and I believe that's when he threw a little shade Ricky's way.
Yep.
And said he couldn't close tournaments.
And then Ricky follows it up with the absolute mastery on 18 at the ball golf course, De La Viega, towards the water for the win, the birthplace of Raptor Legs, and goes on to have arguably the two most dominant years of, obviously the two most dominant years of his career, but arguably the two most dominant years of disc golf that we have ever seen back to back. And it was really stunning. And since then, obviously his major winnings have come to a screeching halt. And that's kind of your glaring thing that you can look at on his career resume since that point. But
okay.
He has won like four Player of the Years, three DGPT championships, and at least 10 Elite Series in that span.
You know who Ricky is? He's Rory McIlroy.
That's true.
Ricky McIlroy. Like, Rory's constantly one of, if not the best player.
And
he just won Pebble Beach. But
I will say, like, you know, also just, you know, say what you want about his on-camera presence and a little bit of the social awkwardness here and there, but deep down, below the surface, one of the nicest, genuinely nicest guys that you can have. And
the thing that always impresses me with Ricky is how outgoing he is and how nice he is to his fans.
Oh, yes. Whenever,
like, to go play at Vista, mind you, there's so many people, and he goes there all the time, and every time he goes out there, people are yelling across the course, Ricky, Ricky, and he's just a sponge for it. He got
stopped by like 10 different people, and he stopped to talk to every single one of them, and even his whole like squad out at his house, he's got his brother out there, Zach, and he's Zach's out there working in Phoenix with one of his buddies, and Rick's letting both of them stay at his house. And, you know, he really does look after everybody. And he really, it was his idea, invited me down and let me stay at his house. He cooked steaks for me all week. And, you know, he really took care of me. I was big shout out to Rick. We love you, dude. And just can't say enough good things about the place that he's going, and excited to see kind of what they can do with his brand, because definitely something that he can benefit from is having Bob Julio in his corner.
And that segment was the Ricky Wysocki fan club segment. All right, mm-hmm. Simon, let's hear you complain. Simon Wines, wah, wah, wah. We need a jingle for this.
We have the jingle. Should we just insert it? Let's insert it.
Let's
send
insert
it.
Thanks, Will.
Simon Wines. Hey, Simon Wines.
Don't get them Simon wines.
All right, this one came to mind yesterday. I added it to my list of many, many things I want to whine about, but this one goes deep. I can't believe it took me a couple of weeks to think about this, but it somehow resurfaced. Ooh. And this is probably one of the biggest things that makes me lose faith in humanity a little bit and makes me deeply, deeply sad. People filming at concerts or events on their phones. I don't understand what goes on in someone's brain when they are at a live event. Let's just say, for example, a concert, and they watch it through their their phone. Who is that video for? What are they doing with this video? How are they not there experiencing it for their own eyes right in front of them and taking it all in as much as a human can possibly take something in? And especially with these teen pop stars, when you look at the crowd and there you all you see is like 5,000 phones in front of faces. I'm not sure something else offends me that much, and it literally makes me not want to go to events, because when I see someone holding their phone filming it, I just want to not be part of this race anymore. Or species, not race, sorry, species.
Is this specifically live concerts or live? Does live sports, is that different?
I would say live sports is a bit different.
Like, what if somebody's filming you while you're playing disc golf? They're coming out to the disc golf pro tour and they want to get footage of you, Simon Lizotte. Do you want to take their phone and throw it away?
I think if you take a video or two when you're out there watching a whole event that's like 4 hours long or even a whole day long, fine.
And so does that justify one or two videos at a concert then? Like one or two?
Are you frustrated?
Really? You can't even take one video? Okay. And if you video for 30 seconds, yeah, I disagree. Because if you let me take one 30-second video at my concert and then I'll soak the rest of it up without my phone, that little 30-second video for me for the rest of my life is my trigger back to that full-body experience. And I have one way to get back to it every time.
I concur with Joey. I totally get what Simon's saying. When you're literally watching the concert through your phone the entire time,
yep,
it's like, that's bad. You're not living in the moment. You're not getting the full experience. But a lot of artists come on and they have these crazy theatrics, and you want to get them coming on stage, and you actually will come back and look at it with fond memories. I can go back in my external hard drive and find some concerts that I went to, and I have like the moments of them coming on stage, and like I get jazzed about it. I'm like, yeah. And I think back and like, dang, I'm glad I recorded this. Mm-hmm. But to record it the entire time, I do agree with Simon. Some people are on their phone way too much and they're not living in the moment.
Well,
I hear your pushback. I accept it, but I stand by what I said. I think phones should be taken away from everyone entering a venue, and you're not allowed to be on it at any point.
I think
I could see that. Because they do that on some comedy shows now, where you literally check your phone in and then you get it at the end of the show.
We just lost the eagle.
Let's let's start by banning phones in elementary, middle, and high schools before we worry about having phones in concert venues.
All right, next segment, guys. That was fun. I feel better now. I got it off my chest.
I will say that I have a very profound sort of experience with that, because in 2017 I went to China for 2 weeks with my high school class, and I had just gotten sort of my first piece of smart technology ever for myself outside of like a school issued iPad, and it was like an iPod Pro with a camera, and it was sweet, and I was super jacked. Or maybe it was an iPhone. Could have been an iPhone. I don't remember.
iPod Touch.
Is that iPod Touch? Is that, was that a, did it have a camera? Did it have a camera?
I don't think it had a camera.
No, so it had to have been an iPhone then. Or was, did...
iPod Touches had cameras. They were basically an iPhone.
Okay, it was an it was an iPod Touch. It totally was an iPod. That's so stupid. Oh, wow. I forgot that entire name. It was an iPod Touch. Anyway, we went with some of my best friends and our group of 30 of us, and I swear, the first city and a half, I did the no-no Simon thing. I filmed every waking moment of it because I wanted to like remember all of it. And I remember one of my best friends actually getting kind of pissed at me at one point. Like, they had tried to subtly kind of, like, tell me to, like, knock it off. And one of them, like, sat me down and was just like, dude, you're, like, missing this whole thing because you're just, like, trying to film all of us doing this. And you need to, like, use these videos as a trigger for these memories and not just try to, like, make a feature-length documentary here, dude. And he's like, I also know that you're too lazy to edit this anyway. And he was like, hit it right on the head. And it was the reason that the rest of that trip was so amazing is because I limited myself to 3 videos a day. And the rest of it, I gave him my iPod. And it was a very powerful moment for me. So I agree with what you're saying and the principle, Simon.
Okay, thank you. I'll take it. I'll take it.
It's a nuanced topic. What if you're a travel vlogger, though? And that's your job. Change professions and don't do that.
Maybe my point on this one wasn't as strong and as good as I thought it was. Maybe I'm alone in what I feel about that.
I get your point because I have the same feelings in a lot of capacities, but there's a lot of nuance to the topic.
There's a lot of nuance to everything.
It's all nuance. Life is nuance. Okay, Joey, do you have your segment?
Yeah, I can do... I have 2 still, but I can do the shortest one first. I'm going to do my quick dart story that I'm going to tell you about my dartboard.
Sorry, Chad.
Oh, gosh.
This is the Chad. When you said Chad the first time, I thought you were talking about... So this is 2 different Chads? Chad Richardson?
Yes, there's 2 different Chads. We have Chad Richardson and Chad Wallach.
Oh, sorry, Chad Wallach. this is the Chad segment for the Chads. So as you knew, I had a Walmart dartboard that I toured with all of last year, $24, mm-hmm. and probably, I don't know, a bit after Christmas, maybe early December, I got my first ever 180, which is 3 triple 20s in a row. Back to back to back. And I took a picture and I posted it on Instagram because I was stoked. And my friend and a fellow pro disc golfer from Finland, Nestori Turkkanen, responded and said, bro, you need to buy a new dartboard. And I looked at the picture and it was, you know, I was like, touche, fair. That is an ugly piece of crap and I should do that. So I went on Amazon and I ordered one. Like $50 board, and it was slated to arrive like the following Tuesday, and on Sunday morning it showed up early, which is just weird for Amazon, but I was stoked, and I opened the box and pulled it out, and it was schnazzy, just super fancy, and I'm like half confused because I'm just like, wait a minute, this is not, I did not buy this, this is, I did not pay. I know what this board is. This is a nice board. And I was like, man, I must have just read the... What else could I have thought? It was... I ordered a dartboard. This was the board. So I hung it up and sent a picture to Nestori. And I was like, dude, check it out. Got my new board. Sent a picture to Simon because we play darts. Check it out. Got my new board. Blah, blah, blah. And then 2 days later, I'm driving around doing some errands. And my mom calls me and she's like, Joey, there's a dartboard at our front steps. Did you double tap your Amazon orders? And I was just like, what? And went and looked. Sure enough, the one that was showed up on Tuesday was my order. And I had not double tapped. And so then I'm starting to scratch my head like, what is going on? Whose dartboard am I playing on? Did one of my neighbors like accidentally get a dartboard dropped off at my house? And then it dawned on me that the exact same day that Nestory had responded about my 180, Simon had randomly texted me for my address. And I thought it was to send me like a balance or something. And I just totally disregarded it. And so I texted him. I was like, dude, did you buy me a dartboard? And his response was, I could not stand watching those stories of that ugly dartboard any longer. So now,
oh my gosh.
So now I own a pro level dartboard, and just crazy how two different darting friends will react to the same Instagram
when you become
story.
From what I hear, when you become a dad, your heart just is so much more capable for love, and you just want to give. You want to give, Simon. Santa Claus, Simon and Santa Claus. There's
Eagle
no difference.
Eagle just said that with his eyes closed. By the way, it was so deep.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. I know how much Joey loves darts, and I saw that photo of his first 180. Obviously, that's a great achievement. But that dartboard was, in some ways, a bit offensive. It was just horrible. It like you could draw a dartboard on a piece of paper and it would be a better dartboard than that. You would just make holes in your wall. That's a better dartboard. Like it was that bad. So I was like, Joey, you know what? If you at this point have not on your own decided to get a new dartboard, I guess I have to do it for you. And I sent him pretty much the nicest dartboard money can buy. And I was kind of shocked when I knew it arrived that he didn't thank me, because I didn't know he ordered one himself. It was a perfect coincidence that he actually placed an order himself that arrived 2 days later, and then he was like, okay, because it was just too weird that he didn't notice that he unboxed the nicest storyboard money can buy versus a $50 Amazon one. But that's Joey.
But
that's
I sent you a no context picture, right? Before I even realized it was you.
I know. I thought that might have been your way to say thank you. But
just showing off, doesn't say thank you or anything. Just a picture, like check out what I got.
That's totally what I said too.
Yeah, I mean, I just took it. I accepted it the way it was, but now it just turned into an even better story. So it's a win-win.
Oh gosh, well,
is that dartboard coming on the road with you?
Well, it's deciding between the nice one or the $50 one. So that I don't know. It just
the $50 one you bought is actually decent. I looked it up. It's definitely road worthy, I would say.
And it only takes one screw to put in instead of this. The fancy one has like a bracket that you have to put two bolts and then like mount it in, and that seems like a lot. In
all
Airbnbs.
Last year, whatever Airbnb we stayed at, Joey, the first thing he did was, all right, time to hang the dartboard. Like no matter where it was, the dartboard was getting hung.
Oh my gosh. All right. So Chad is already like universes away at this point. Let's try to reel him back before the episode's over. Anybody else you want to continue on?
Yeah, I think we're at the hour mark. So we'll probably try to wrap it up pretty soon.
All right. Well, then let me do my next little thing, because this is a nice little kind of deep dive into the segment that I brought for today. Inside the circle of your mind. And today, we are going to talk about confidence. I'm going to read a little passage from my book, Zen Golf, and then we're going to discuss it, okay?
All right, let's do it.
I love it.
This chapter is called Unconditional Confidence. How well we play golf is often a reflection of our level of confidence. We'd all like to have the feeling that every drive will find the fairway and every putt will find the hole. It's important to recognize that there are three kinds of confidence. False confidence. False confidence doesn't help at all. It's just talking big, kidding ourselves. It can lead to taking unrealistic chances, usually with disastrous consequences. We may be trying to impress others into thinking we're better than we actually are. The truth comes out in no time on the golf course. Conditional confidence. This kind of confidence depends on recent results. We are confident on the condition that we continue to play well. When things go well, our confidence can build until we feel like we can make every shot. But if things go badly, we start questioning our ability. We start asking, what's wrong with me? From there, down we go. If we're worried that we might hit a bad shot, and we do, we feel even less confident for the next one. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The antidote to this is unconditional confidence. Unconditional confidence arises from connecting with our basic goodness. We believe in ourselves as decent people and in our golfing skills for our level of play. This doesn't mean we expect to hit every shot perfectly. It does mean we can handle whatever the result is. With unconditional confidence, our self-worth as a human being doesn't depend on how well or poorly we strike a golf ball. We see our nature and our abilities as basically good, and in the difficulties we encounter as temporary experiences. Instead of assuming something is wrong with our swing and trying to fix it, we reflect on what may have interfered with our intention on that shot. This approach makes it possible to quickly turn things around and play well again.
Bravo. I didn't know unconditional confidence was a real term, because I always used to say that in interviews, and I thought I made it up. But it's good to know that it's actually a thing, because it makes so much sense, and it's definitely a real thing. And I am very glad that I have, or in the recent years, it's been harder. I feel like age doesn't help with unconditional confidence. I feel like young, just being kind of like young with less worries and less other stuff going on helps with unconditional Naive. Confidence. Naive, I had that word in my head. I didn't feel like it perfectly fit. But just kind of, I feel like when you're young, you just have less concerns and worries about possible outcomes.
You're like blissful. You're a little more ignorant. It's just like...
Yeah, ignorance might be a bit close to the word I was looking for, but in a good way. Like, ignorance sounds ignorant. Like very negative, but like a positive ignorance.
Blissfully ignorant.
Blissfully ignorant.
It's like when you're a kid, I mean, you look at a baby and in a lot of ways that they're perfect because they're not corrupted by our society. They're pure and joyful. And there's a level of that when you're just coming out on the scene. I remember first breaking out, everything was new and fun. And then when you get so conditioned in your set ways, then you can kind of lose that if you don't have that unconditional confidence, when you realize or when you lose the basic goodness, like Joey was talking about, in each and every situation, you can really start being pulled into these pits of darkness if you're not careful. But being above it, dotting your I's, crossing your T's, each and every action you make is an act of confidence. I work with a mental coach, and whenever I say that I'm trying to build confidence, he tells me, Eagle, confidence is an action, not a feeling. And what that means to me is looking at myself each and every day in the mirror and saying, am I doing what I can do best in each and every moment? And I think that parallels a lot with what Joey's passage is. That's what makes this unconditional confidence that the Zen Golf talks about.
Yeah, I think, it's really important. It's like, I think confidence is the separation between being very good or being great.
Yep.
And I kind of believe, I don't know, maybe you guys have some examples for me where I'm wrong, but I think almost, at least as far as I know, every greatest of all time, or like those top three guys that are just the greatest, have been doing that activity or that sport or that skill as a kid. They started when they were like pre-puberty. And I think that's a bit what it takes. And if you had to learn something, let's say after you're 16, I'll just use that as a kind of a split off for no reason exactly, just came to mind. I think unconditional confidence is maybe impossible to obtain, or very, very hard. It's just very rare that if you start something later in life, you'll
nothing is impossible.
That's our homework. That's our homework for the fans out there. Write down in the comments on this episode if you can find us any greatest of all time or really good whatever in their particular sport or area that started after the age, like notable good sportsmen at that started that sport after the age of 16.
There's a lot of MMA guys. There's a lot of MMA guys who started later in life.
Sure.
That who have climbed the ranks and been some of the best to ever do it. But when it comes to fine motor skills, I see what Simon's saying.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, fighting is a little bit less precise. Like, you know, like something like, I mean.
It is and
back,
it isn't.
Back to darts. Luke Littler. They have these videos of Luke Littler playing at age 3 and 4. I mean, just the tiniest of kids. And they, Simon, did you know that when he was playing juniors, they had to change the rules in order to allow him on stage because they only allowed 14 and over and he was 12 playing in the 14 overs and they had to literally go in and change like the English Board of Darts rules about having like underage kids on stage.
It's wild. I mean, yeah, I think the earlier you start at something, the more unconditional confidence you will have. And unconditional confidence is so big because I think we've all felt losing confidence on a disc golf course. It is one of the worst feelings when you're just doubting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, all the greats go through years and years.
Back
of
to Ricky Wysocki. This needs to be the Ricky Wysocki fan club episode. That should be the name of the episode. Ricky speaks so highly of himself. Like, he is always talking about winning. And this should be a completely different podcast because we could talk ad nauseum about this because I'm always trying to cultivate a killer mindset. But from my experience hearing Ricky talk, there's almost a level of delusion. And you hear that in Paul's voice. You hear it in Gannon's voice. But that delusion is a superpower. You have to know when to draw the line, I think, to realize that you're in the real world. But Joey, thinking he's going to beat Simon at darts, Simon thinks Joey's delusional.
Of course he does. But he doesn't know how much I've practiced.
But what's the alternative? Thinking that you're not going to be the best,
mm-hmm.
you're going to fail. Like, that's a terrible mindset.
Yeah.
For all my weebs out there, Asta from Black Clover there's a really powerful scene in the show that he is this total pompous dude who, like, no, his talk does not meet the expectation that he puts out. But there's a really good scene in there that he talks on. It's like, what do I do otherwise? Am I this pathetic person that mopes and shies away from tasks at hand? You gotta have a false confidence, but that will eventually lead to this unconditional confidence, which Gannon portrays, Paul portrays, Ricky portrays. I think that's so important.
I don't think confidence necessarily means failing or succeeding. Like, you can be confident and fail.
That's true. We tie confidence to success, which that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. You got to go beyond the duality.
This doesn't mean that we expect to hit every shot perfectly. It does mean that we can handle whatever the result is. That's like my favorite little excerpt from that whole chapter.
Yeah, and I've noticed this throughout many sports that I watch, and that is a difference between professionals and amateurs. Like, when I go on a golf course and I shank a shot, I'm talking about traditional golf right now, I can slam the club into the ground. Sometimes I've never actually broken a club, but I've definitely felt the temptation to. I'll be cussing and screaming on the golf course after shanking a shot, even though I play golf like 10 times a year and I totally suck. I'm nowhere even near actual amateur level, but I get so upset over a shanked shot. And when professionals hit errant shots, they just know it's part of the game. When we throw bad shots in disc golf, we just know it's part of the game. Yes, sometimes we can get flustered. Sometimes we get caught off guard. Sometimes it gets overly, like, stuff gets built up over time where you at some point have to let frustration out a bit. But generally speaking, I feel like amateurs get way more frustrated at mistakes than professionals, even though obviously the professional should technically be way more annoyed by their mistakes because, I mean, if you do it as a professional, you're obviously more skilled than an amateur. So it kind of does make sense as an amateur that you have higher expectations in yourself than as a pro. It's kind of confidence is all about being okay with making your mistakes and to an extent expecting to make mistakes.
Yep.
It's not being attached to the fruits of your labor.
Knowing that ultimate success can still come despite small mistakes. That's the thing as a professional. And there's a fantastic interview that Roger Federer gives where he talks about he's talking to a university graduating class about how like success is all relative. And he asked them if they could guess like his winning percentage across his career of matches. So I'll let you guys guess. You don't know a lot about tennis, but you know Roger Federer is great. Across his entire career, what percentage of his matches do you think he won?
I watched the same video again, Joey.
I didn't watch it, but it's probably like 20%.
No, it's 82%, 81% of his matches.
I'm way off.
That's why he's one of the greatest of all time. 82%, 80, I think it was the 80%.
I was thinking of basketball percentages for some reason.
Sure, sure. Him, Nadal, and Djokovic are all above 80%. And then he asked the follow-up question, which was, in that exact same span, what was the percentage of points that he won? And the answer is like 52%. So he won 52% of his total points across his career, but 80% of his matches. So it really shows you like the margin of error between like ultimate success and failure. And it's really like the separation of like confidence and preparation. And there's like that famous ad of Michael Jordan where you can't see him. You just see the back of his head and he's just reading off like the I missed like 7,000 shots and I my this, and then it turns around and it's him and Michael Jordan and he's smiling. He's like, hi, I'm Michael Jordan. And it's like
it's devoting yourself to the process of whatever medium you're choosing to explore, whether it be disc golf, tennis, basketball. It's falling, it's being completely immersed in the task at hand and being okay with the trials and tribulations that you're going to face and welcoming them to you. It's the adversity that shapes the person and how they respond to it rather than the successes. You barely learn anything when winning, but there is a whole host of knowledge on the other side. Basically, anytime you go out and lose is not even a good term. Whenever you go out and learn, then that's where you're getting the wealth of your knowledge. If you're open to taking what the course gives you, what the tennis court gives you, what the dartboard gives you.
But winning, whether that's actually winning the tournament or winning in your mental goals, winning is the proof to your mind that you are doing the right process and the right reflection in order to move yourself forward. So, like, yes, you don't learn, you maybe not learn something when you win, but when you win, it is the reinforcement that the steps that you're taking and the way that you choose to go about improvement is working.
Yeah, the difference between winning and not winning is so unbelievably small. Almost every single tournament, I was actually just this morning, I got up at 4 a.m. with my daughter this morning, and I was just scrolling through my YouTube and the European Open final round popped up, Jomis Productions, the back nine of the final round where Ricky and Gannon were battling. Ricky was freaking 14 under through 17 holes, by the way, that final round. Just absolute mind-boggling.
And, Ricky Wysocki fan club.
I mean, Ricky was... I mean, if one millimeter goes different in that final round, Ricky wins. And the whole Ricky not winning major story is over. And Gannon's season might go completely different from there on. And it is so small. If I look at my win in Nashville last year, I almost made a YouTube video after I won that tournament, kind of trying to prove to people how unbelievably lucky that win was, even though I won
by
like 5 strokes.
You should not have won that tournament at all. You, that practice round that I played with you that week, I could not have seen a more dejected, unconfident player in my life.
No, that's not even it. I was going to show clips from the final round where I was battling with Paul McBeth early in the round on the front nine. I shot like 8 under on the front nine that round. And my putts were barely squeaking in. Paul's putts were barely not going in. Like literally differences like within an inch of some bad putts go in, some good putts don't go in. We all know it. And we threw some similar shots that landed within feet of each other on holes. And I would get a great skip and roll towards the basket, and Paul would hit like a twig on the ground, and his disc would like spin and roll backwards. I mean, I've said it a million times, but the difference between a 10-under round and a 2-under round can literally be a freaking inch. But it makes such a big difference on your scorecard. It is crazy. Life is nuance, as Eagle said earlier.
It is. Life is
but
nuanced.
Look at how he bounced back. I mean, it's ability to have a short-term memory. I mean, his next round was the third highest rated round in disc golf history, and it was almost one of the greatest rounds of all time because he almost shot 17 under with a freaking ace on the last hole off the freaking hill in Tallinn. I mean, that is, and goes on to win the tournament and almost chokes.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, who are you talking about? Sorry.
Rick bouncing.
Ricky Wysocki,
so,
of course.
So his next round after that final round of European Open, like you're talking about, the next round after that
was
the 11-19 rated, almost 11-30 rated 16 under.
I played with Ricky that round. Yeah, you're mm-hmm. right.
Can I make one point on your Nashville win?
That was crazy. Yes, Eagle, please.
You were sick.
So
everyone knows I was sick. We don't have to say it again.
All I'll say is like there, you feel like you're getting lucky and you probably were. But when you look at Gannon, there's no way, like there's some luck in Gannon's game, but the fact that he won 9 events, there's nuance to this discussion. It's like, it's not, it doesn't, there's no way it comes all down to luck. And
no,
that's a big thing. So this is a big problem for me, is that when I play the victim mentality out on the road, I usually say, oh, I got unlucky. The basket didn't catch. Oh, the wind only blows when I throw. Wah, wah, wah. That's totally not true. But you can give it so much merit. It's not even funny. But when I'm processing things at a high level of mind, I completely try to take luck out of my vocabulary and my entire mindset. And I think that's what's important for me to remember, to completely disregard the concept of luck at all. But it's so hard to, because when I play a bad round, the first thing I want to talk about is I got unlucky.
How unlucky
I want to whine about to Ratana, and then Ratana just tells me, you know, you say luck doesn't exist, and listen to you. She puts me in my
after
place.
Every round, it's always a battle who got the most unlucky. That's always the main talking point.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there's times where you're unlucky, but I think it's better to think that it's not a thing
than to think
it is.
You got to be like a little bird walking along, and then
a cockapoo?
And then all of a sudden, a cockatiel. Then
you
all of a sudden.
You said cockapoo last episode.
An earthquake starts happening, and earthquake is like your bad luck. You can choose to rise above. You can choose to take to the sky and allow the trembling on the ground to not affect your forward progress. Or you can choose to walk and let the earthquake halt your progress. But your mind can be like a bird, and you can rise above the interference.
I think
the cockapoo, also known as a cocker poo, is a dog crossbreed bred from the cocker spaniel and the poodle, most commonly the miniature poodle.
I think those were perfect closing words, guys. Does anyone have anything else they have to say? Or
I have just a very quick unsolicited advice.
Oh, gosh.
Go watch Metallica live in Moscow, 1991. It was the fall of the Soviet Union, and they played in front of 1.6 million people. And I'm not really a Metallica fan. I just thought it was Enter Sandman, and I feel like that song's overplayed. But my goodness, I have been so captivated by this show, the amount of people they're playing in front of. And I mean, Metallica, it gives me a new respect for Metallica. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, and then just on that slight go watch this thing, Simon, I finally watched Another Stab at Life about 7 days ago. Oh my goodness, I cried the entire time, and it's unbelievable. What a freaking amazing story, and whoever did the production did an absolute justice. You just hope that stories that good get a fantastic production crew to tell it well, and that is what happened here. I would just, it's one of the best, most motivational, it is the classic like perspective shift that somebody like me was like definitely needing, because like I think it's going to be my go-to whenever I'm feeling like bad about myself, is to just go watch that and shift that back into the right mindset.
Amazing.
Well, I'm glad you watched it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I do think it is very impactful and meaningful, and I recommend anyone to watch it. And it's only 11 minutes. Totally worth your time. Episode names. I have two. I know Ricky Fan Club is already a good one.
Ricky Fan Club.
I think Sorry Chad would also be a fitting episode name.
I thought about that one too.
And I also have Blissfully Ignorant as a possible name.
My vote has got to be Ricky Fan Club.
Ricky
because
Fan
we talked
Club.
About we talked about Ricky so much in this episode.
Ricky Fan Club.
All right, Ricky, Ricky Fan, Fan Club. Club. It is. I'm definitely part of that.
Me too.
And that's all. I also liked his new logo. I think they did a pretty good job. On
yes.
brand.
And I never connected the dots that now he can throw the Raptor and that he was already the Raptor. Like that. Just
absolute match made in heaven. And that being said, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks, guys, for joining. Good to see you. And I'm looking forward to next week already.
I love it. We got a thing going.
I'll
thanks
be in
for
Florida
listening,
next week, baby. It's getting real.
Ooh, sunny Joey. Joey in the shades. Joey in, on
should
the
I,
beach.
Ooh. Should I have Calvin pop in?
No
post
guests.
In the comments.
No guests yet.
No guests allowed.
Oh, tell Simon how he makes you feel, fans. See you guys next week.
I think it'd be hilarious if we had each one of our dads act as us for one episode. That'd be hilarious.
I don't think my dad has the sense of humor to keep that up. All right, Simon, are you ready?
Oh my gosh, I forgot we were recording.
Yeah, let's...
this will be like the little snippet at the end of the show.
Yeah, right.